members of the public and other entities who came to attend this meeting, you all welcome. I'm not going to do introductions because I think the team has been changed. We don't have any new members. Everybody we see has been here for quite some time. Honorable Makubele, Masha. They've seen them because this is not the first meeting this year. But anyway, we Honorable Van der Westhuizen, can you introduce yourself for the last time?
No. I may have to do this more than once again. I'm Andrikus Van der Westhuizen, a member of the Portfolio Committee.
Yeah, and the other member who has joined this committee is Honorable Motau. I don't see him here.
I trust that he would still be on his way, sir.
Okay. This meeting is open. We've got two items on the agenda. Actually, the two items are one. It's one item on the agenda. The last item will be discussed by members only. That is our study tour. But between now and 12 o'clock, we'll give this opportunity to the department to make their presentation briefing, Department of Labor Strategy and the Compensation Fund. We are having time constraints, so what we're going to do, we're going to fly over this. And so that in our own time, we'll have enough time to study this, because we didn't get enough time actually to go through the documents. As you well know, that it took you many months to write these documents down, to bring everything together. So it cannot take us 5 hours to absorb and, you know, read, understand, and engage meaningfully. So this is the first engagement about the strategic plan. It is the beginning of many meetings to come in the next 3 months. Thank you very much. I've got an apology from Williams. He's off sick. The second apology comes from Manamela. He's in Johannesburg. Those are the only two apologies I have. And the DG and the minister are not here. There's a cabinet meeting, and I think that both of them are in that meeting. Can we give over to the COO to take us through the plan?
Thank you, Chairperson. Our presentation will be in two parts. The first part will be just to give you a quick overview of where we are in terms of performance against plan up to the third quarter and ended 31st of December 2011, and then we will take the key features of the strat plan, this new strat plan that was tabled on the 7th. I can see that the printing is done, members are receiving copies now, and then we will take the supporting budget, talking to the objectives of the department. And then from there, we will take a presentation from Commissioner Mkonto on the compensation fund. Chair, in terms of the table of contents, I will not go through the mandate, but we've got 7 points, starting from the mandate, ending with expectations from the portfolio committee. Actually, what we request from you, mainly the key thing being support of our legislative amendments. on slide 4. This slide just talks to our objectives and the part of the 12 outcomes of government that we are supporting. We are mainly supporting outcome 4, outcome 11, and outcome 12. In terms of our strategic objectives, we've got eight strategic objectives, and each one of them is meshed to support a specific outcome and output of government. Our work is predominantly, in terms of slide 5, done in output 4, where we contribute to employment creation, promote equity in the labor market, protect vulnerable workers, strengthen social protection, promote sound labor relations, and monitor the impact of legislation. The other two, strengthening multilateral and bilateral relations, that's the work that we do in the AU and mainly SADC and the ILO. And then outcome 12 is more inward looking, which is meshed with our, supported by our strategic objective 8, strengthening the institutional capacity of the department, where we look at the structure, the strategy, and the supporting budget. In terms of slide 6, our key aspects in terms of strategic plan 11-12, our oriented goals for the department. The first one is the implementation of decent work country program. The second one is the rebuilding of the public employment services. We've got projects going in the department, and each of these strategic goals are supported by projects that have started in the department, refocusing and rebuilding the public employment services to focus on job seekers registration and matching and placement and upskilling. The third one is the strengthening of the inspectorate. We want in the current year to bed down the issue of professionalization and building capacity into the inspectorate so that when the bills go through, we've got the capacity to start biting in terms of the new legislation. The fourth one is strengthening social security, including the reintegration of workers into the labor market and restructuring the sheltered employment factories. You'll hear later in the presentation we are refocusing sheltered employment factories, and we are having a few things in the pipeline to turn around the sheltered employment factory. And the last one is strengthening the institutional capacity of the department, as I said. Just quickly to run through the performance against plan, I will not touch on everything. I will just highlight the key issues. In terms of our objective one, contributing to employment creation, our main issue here was to have finalized the Employment Services Bill by 2011. We know that the process in NEDLAG has been completed, and the bills will be processed back to Cabinet in a few days or so. In terms of number of job seekers registered on the system, and job seekers placed and referred to opportunities, the performance up to the end of the third quarter is that we have registered 403,000 job seekers and placed 64,798. The figure is very low, but we know the dynamics of the economy. We've got a growing economy which is not creating jobs. Instead, we are shedding jobs. We are finding it difficult to place people. However, we are transferring the registered job seekers to other opportunities, other income generating opportunities, and other training opportunities to upskill them so that they can take up the opportunities when the economy starts creating jobs. In terms of slide 10, the number of SMMEs managers assisted to manage matters related to intellectual property. This goes with our socially responsible investments and our training layoff schemes. You will hear more about that when the UIF comes to present in a few days. You will also hear a few from in a few initiatives from the compensation fund. Be that as it may, we know that the main creator of jobs in the economy is SMEs, and hence our focus in assisting them. We assist them mainly and predominantly through Productivity SA, where we train managers on issues of governance, issues of improving capacity, issues of intellectual property. So far, we've trained 2,074 managers, and in terms of the social responsibility investment, we've taken up bonds issued by the IDC, and the IDC mainly funds loans this money to infrastructure projects, and in turn, those infrastructure projects create jobs in the economy. I've spoken about slide 10 as well. I lumped slide 9 and 10 and 11 into that explanation. So far, as at the end of December, we were targeting 9,000 workers in distressed companies that we will give assistance to that. And so far, we've done 5,543 workers benefited from this initiative, and we have saved 4,816 jobs. In terms of the sheltered employment factories legal status, we know that the legal provision for SEF is contained in the bill, and as I said earlier, there are initiatives. Treasury is assisting in terms of the business case, and sales have improved. We want the sheltered employment factories to move from a situation of loss-making to breaking even, and eventually to being self-sustaining. We've got deals in the pipeline. There is a turnaround strategy on the table. It has been approved. It will be implemented. The deals that are in the pipeline, just to give an example, the Department of Basic Education is in negotiations with us for us to supply school desks through the sheltered employment factories to about 427 schools. We are hoping that that will go a long way in trying to get SEF out of the loss-making situation. You'll see that we were supposed to take 600 learners with disabilities, but due to the financial situation, we did not take any additional learners nor any additional factory workers, because we are still working on trying to get them out of the loss-making situation. I'll skip slide 14. In slide 15, this 15, 16, and 17, Chair, are just the breakdowns in terms of provinces, just to demonstrate how we have spread the targets throughout the country and what the actual performance is as at the end of December. I think we can engage on these figures in detail when we bring the annual report. Due to time constraints now, the figures are there. They'll change in the annual report. This is just up to December, and then we can engage in detail. In terms of slide 18, our strategic objective 2, promoting equity in the labor market. We are still talking about the amendments there, and we are targeting we're targeting 10,000 workplaces inspected, 60 JSC listed companies, 140 designated employers, and 9,800 procedural inspections to be done. We were looking at achieving an 80% compliance with EE legislation, but compliance as at the end of December was 72%. That shows that we did not achieve the level of compliance that we want, because there are still employers out there that do not comply with the EE legislation. In terms of the HIV and AIDS code and technical assistance guidelines, we have gone on roadshows, and all comments have been taken, and changes and additions were effected to the draft code, and we are preparing in preparation for discussions at NEDLAC. The following slides just show the provincial breakdown of the 10,000. The 60 JSE, the 140 designated, and the 9,800 procedural inspections. In terms of slide 21, protecting vulnerable workers, our strategic objective 3, the BCEA amendment, I will not repeat it, but we know where the process is in terms of these bills. And in terms of reviewing sectoral determination, we've done the amendments and we've published in the gazetted, in the government gazette two sectoral determinations, one for contract cleaning and the other one for domestic workers. Research is currently in progress in terms of the taxi sector, taxi industry, and the farming and forestry one is in the process of approval inside the department. As soon as all the approvals have been obtained, we will then publish it in the government gazette. Civil society strengthened. We are involved with 8 civil society organizations. I think members know the list now: Dzila, Workers College Natal, SA Labour Bulletin, Velukanya, Sakotu, Kolakwe, Advice Office, and the Credoc Office. The 4 that are mentioned here on slide 21 have received their second tranches of payment. In terms of continuing with protecting vulnerable workers, our target was to inspect 130,000 workplaces and achieving an 80% compliance. We did 59,601 routine inspections with a 74 compliance, as I said, and we received 98,910 labor-related complaints, and 80% of those were settled within 14 days. Then follows the provincial breakdown in terms of the targets and the actual performance and the compliance level, aggregating to a national compliance level of 74%. In terms of slide 25, strengthening social protection, here we wanted to conduct inspections in identified industries exposing workers to silica dust. We've so far done 96 inspections, 96 workplaces, and all of them are in Gauteng. Here we want to establish a baseline, and once we've got a baseline, we will work then on reducing the exposure to silica dust by at least 2% per annum. It will escalate as we go along. In terms of the OHS bill, our target was to develop and enact it into law. We are looking at submitting it to cabinet by August 2012. but consultations have started with relevant departments, and inputs have been received. In terms of our high-risk sectors, we identified the iron and steel, construction, chemical, and agriculture and forestry industries as high-risk sectors, and we've done blitzes in these sectors. We know that the portfolio committee and the select committee have supported the minister in terms of blitzes in some of these industries, especially the agriculture industry. And in terms of collective agreements, we were targeting 18 collective agreements published within 60 days of receipt. So far, we've dealt with 7 collective agreements. 2 were for renewals and extension of a period of operation, and 5 extensions of collective agreements to non-parties. In terms of the decision to register new labor organizations within 90 days, we dealt with 45 applications. 5 were approved. Of those 5, 4 were trade unions and 1 was an employer's organization. We rejected 37 and 3 applications were cancelled. In terms of slide 27, our strengthening the institutional capacity of the department, as I said earlier, this is more inward looking. Our key deliverables today are to reduce the vacancy rate to below 8% by 31 March year end, and as of December, the vacancy rate was sitting at 7.17%. We are mindful, Chair, of the State of the Nation address of actually filling all vacant posts. What we are doing is that as soon as we know that a person is leaving, we start the process, we advertise, we interview so that we keep this vacancy rate to as low as we can, because as we know, the public service is very mobile, people move all the time, but we are mindful of the fact that we must actually have zero vacancy rate. In terms of the percentage of women and youth and people with disability employed in line with the EE plan, our target was 34% of women employed in senior management service, 43% of youth, 3% of people with disability. We know that the national target for people with disability is 2%, but we had pitched ours inside the department at 3%. There are initiatives in the DPS, in the GNA cluster, governance and administration cluster, that actually we must up our percentages. Departments must up their percentages of women employed in senior management services to 50%. Once it's been approved and it's gone through all the processes, we will commit to that target. Our performance to date is 37.5%. We've exceeded the 34% target. Were employed in SMS level as at the end of December, and 39.8% of youth and 2.6% people with disability employed in the department as at the end of the third quarter. In terms of the customer complaints, this information we get from the presidency. It is independent, it is verifiable. We are actually the number one department in the country. We were sitting in December at 97% resolution rate. As at last week, Friday, we were at 98%. In terms of other complaints and compliments management systems, in all labor centers, we've got complaints and compliments books. They are managed by committees and the heads of labor centers on a weekly basis, so that all customer complaints are resolved. in terms of accessibility. This is a deliverable also in the GNA cluster. We are participating in two studies, two of the big metros, one in Gauteng and the Joburg Metro, and one in KwaZulu-Natal, the eThekwini Metro, on this accessibility study. It is led by the GPSA, funded by them, and the report is going to come out in August 2012. So we will bring the results here. But internally in the department as well, we are doing our work. We've got a database of provincial dynamics, the geographic spread, our footprint, and we are then going to use that information through assistance, external assistance, to plot it into a GIS system so that the data turns into useful information that we can use so that we can know where exactly to plot our access points, taking into account the Tucson service centers, the mobile labor centers, and the physical buildings, including the way that UIF has gone in terms of the virtual office, and the way that the compensation fund is going to go in terms of reducing feet in our labor centers to get employers to submit returns on the web through the internet. Chair, I know I've skimmed through all the major points. I would like to hand over to Mr. Mutiba to just take us through the key points of the Strat Plan 12-13 going forward, and the supporting budget by the CFO, and then we will hand over to Commissioner Mkhonto to continue. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. With your permission, I would request that we go back to slide number 5 just to give a picture of the content of our strat plan. Members, you from this slide, you will notice that this covers the whole content of our strategic plan, to the extent that it is in essence a continuation from the presentation that has been made by the COO, in that over 70% of the things that are covered in the strategic plan 2012-2017, it's actually what we have been doing in the previous year, so that we have continuity. To that extent, we are still pursuing the three service delivery outcomes as reflected at the service delivery outcome 4, decent employment through inclusive economic growth, service delivery outcome 11, creating a better South Africa and contributing to a better and safer Africa in a better world, and service delivery outcome 12, an efficient, effective, and development-oriented public service, and an empowered and inclusive citizenship. Now, what we have done is to then say where lies our focus, and we have then, in terms of the right-hand side, we have identified 8 strategic objectives. 6 of them are focusing on our response in respect of service delivery outcome 4, that of decent employment through inclusive economic growth. We therefore say, in the strategic plan 2012-17, we will still be focusing on contribution to employment creation, promote equity in the labor market, protecting vulnerable workers, strengthening social protection, promoting sound labor relations, monitoring the impact of legislation. In terms of outcome 11, we will focus on strengthening multilateral and bilateral relations. That's the work that we do in the ILO and in the continent. And then in terms of service delivery outcome 12, we will strengthen the institutional capacity of the department. I will therefore, in terms of content, request that we go to slide number 30. What I would like to highlight there is that in this financial year, we would want to pursue the finalization of the discussions on the public employment services legislation and regulations. We believe that if we can finalize that process, it will then give us a policy framework for effective public employment services. We'll be able to register job seekers, profile them, and place them in respective opportunities, and we'll also be in a position to have employers registering opportunities on the system. And one other work that we'll be doing in that regard is to ensure that the companies in distressed sectors are being provided with assistance. The other area that I would like to highlight, it's on slide 31. Output 1.3, which talks to special employment opportunities provided to eligible people with disabilities from all racial groups. There, the key thing that we would want to do is to ensure that we enhance the capacity of the sheltered employment factories to support people with disabilities. We just wanted to highlight that. The next area that I would like to highlight is on slide 32. In terms of output 1.4, jobs saved in distressed companies, so that we ensure that enterprises that are facing the risk of closure and jobs at risk of being lost are saved through social plan interventions. You will note that in the previous presentation, we were a bit weak in this area, and we want to focus more in this financial year so that we finalize all processes relating to issues around the layoff scheme so that we can be able to support companies which are facing risks. I would also want to highlight slide 33, in terms of output 1.6, capacitated SMEs and contribute to sustainable employment creation. There, we want to follow in terms of the last area that we have reflected there, that we want to increase employment creation in SMEs through local procurement. That's where we would want to ensure that at least, even though inwardly, our procurement should be focused locally and make sure that at least we pay SMEs within 30 days of invoicing. It's one area that we'd want to focus on in this coming financial year. The next area is on slide 34. Regarding strategic objective 2, promoting equity in the labor market. I just want to emphasize that most of the period of the time before now, we were more focused on procedural compliance, that is to ensure that companies submit reports and so on. But now we are moving into ensuring that we focus on substantive compliance. That is why in the second block in the middle, we are saying percentage of employment equity designated employers complying with their EE plans to reflect the demographics of the country in all occupational categories or levels. We have a established teams that could assist us in ensuring that we're able to focus and begin to make an impact in that area. The other area that I want to reflect on below that one is issues regarding income disparities along racial and gender lines, we want to ensure that we reduce income disparities along racial and gender lines to eliminate unfair discrimination in salaries. That's one area that we'd be focusing on this year, apart from the other things that we normally do. From that, I would like to also highlight slide 35, to improve capacity to monitor and enforce compliance with legislation. I just want to highlight two things. The first block in the middle there, amendments to the BCEA, to the extent that at least the discussions that NEDLAC in that regard have been finalized, and we believe that that would then begin to give us more capacity to be able to enforce the law. The other area is the last block in the middle there, in terms of workplaces inspected and audited. You will now realize that we have actually segmented the sectors that are problematic in terms of vulnerable sectors, which include private security, agriculture, forestry, hospitality, and domestic workers. So we'll focus mostly on those areas in terms of ability inspections as well as ordinary inspections, so that at least we improve compliance in that in those sectors to ensure protection of vulnerable workers. I will that we move to slide 36, just to highlight output 3.2, sectoral determinations published for residual and emerging vulnerable workers. The key thing that I would want to highlight there is that we want to improve the status of vulnerable workers by investigating the feasibility of establishing a medical aid scheme for the private security sector, because those workers don't have some level of protection in terms of medical aid. So that's one area that we would want to highlight to the committee. Moving forward, Chairperson, on slide 37, the other area that in terms of the 3.2, in terms of key performance indicators, we would want to establish a provident fund for the domestic worker and farm worker sectors to bring them in line with other sectors. So this is one area that we'll be investigating, so that we establish those, ensure that those two sectors are covered in terms of provident funds. On slide 38, we believe that this is one area that we need to put a lot of weight on in terms of our inspections, and to that extent, we will, for this financial year, be repealing the Occupational Health and Safety Bill and its regulations, so that we enhance our capacity to enforce legislation. Beyond it, it's more about reducing incidents in the high-risk sectors, and we have identified those sectors. They include industries in the foundries, in ceramics, in sandstone, in construction, refractories, and sandblasting. We believe that if we can focus on these industries, we can be in a position to reduce the level of exposure of workers to incidents in the workplace. On slide 39 is just the continuous work that we do. I would not want to take time on that one. The same happens on slide 40. I would move that we move to slide 41. I believe that Mr. Lamati can help me in that regard.
Thank you, Honorable.
Honorable Chair, the refractories are industries that use a lot of heat to burn either iron to produce whatever type of material that needs to be produced, but mostly is they burn either iron or bricks, but mainly is the amount of heat that is used in that environment and the exposure of employees to the dust, which especially silica dust. It operates more like there's no much difference between the foundry and the refractory.
Thanks to Ms. Delamati for coming in there. On slide 41 and 42 is just the work that we do in terms of the ILO as well as in the continent. So it's continuous work that we do there. There are no key things that would want to bring to your attention except that it's continuous. On slide 43, I think I would just want to emphasize output 8.2, which talks to improve service delivery access and quality. That's the work that we'll be doing with a focus on our labor centers to ensure that they are accessible to citizens. Secondly, that we're able to improve our turnaround in terms of whenever people seek services from us, and as well as the responsive time, so that people then don't take too long waiting in the queues in our labor centers. So the focus in that regard will be around that area. Chairperson, and other slides are just a continuation of the work that we do. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. As you know, we got this presentation only today, this morning. I'm seeing this presentation for the first time. We got it this morning only. So there's no way that we can have a meaningful engagement about this. And you know very well how long it took you to bring this document together. You can't expect us to read it and understand, internalize it, and make meaningful inputs within less than 30 minutes. So we'll take this just as an introduction to what the document is all about. And then we'll look at it, and in our own time we'll call you so that we can have a meaningful engagement about this. Presently, we just don't want to pass a document because it's presented to us dutifully, so we need to, after reading it, we can make our own determination and then, you know, and have a buy-in. And I just want to say the other challenge is here is I don't see the budget, but maybe that will come. That would come in later, but there must be something in the plan that say this is we're going to use this much for the. Oh yeah, okay. Oh.
Honourable Chair and honourable members, just a quick reflection on the budget that has been allocated to the department, in the estimate of national expenditure as well as the adjusted estimate of national expenditure. The slide one, I think, presents the figures that we have currently in our budget. Well, the original budget was 1.981 billion, and during the current year, we just passed our 2 billion mark on the budget. The table below, I think, also is the same amount, but classified in terms of economic classification as we normally do so in the public sector. The slide 2, I think, explains in detail the movement from 1.981 to 2.17 billion. The first adjustment was the rollover that we requested from Treasury of 2.9 million due to some commitments that we had in 2009-10 financial year. The second one is the salary adjustment that was given to us due to the higher than expected settlement by the DPSA with the labor sector with regard to the payment of salaries. We budgeted at a lower percentage in our initial budget, and the settlement was at a higher expected at the higher rate than what we budgeted for. As a result, we're given that difference by Treasury. Also, during the current year, we had to come to Parliament with the unforeseen and unavoidable expenditure of the injury of on duty of the public servants, as we know that the Department of Labour is the custodian more than the insurance part of the public servants, except those ones that are stipulated. I normally say the ones that carry guns is there.
The police,
army, and there are three of them that are excluded from this one. But the rest, when they get injured on duty, they are claimed through the compensation fund passed through the Department of Labor. And we had.
The intelligence.
I think they will fall within one of the. It's correctional services, yes. So we had a shortfall on that particular line item, and the money that was allocated for the public servants was not enough to cover for those injuries. As a result, we were given an additional 26.5 million for that amount, which we've duly paid to the compensation fund. That, by and large, takes care of the increase in our original budget to the adjusted budget at year end, of which we're going to account for in the end of this month on our annual report. Then the next slide, I think, gives the indication of what we're going to receive during the MTF period, which is just above 2 million and increase on an average growth of 6.1%. In the year 2012-13, the indicative allocation is 2.119 billion. In the year 2013-14 is 2.261 billion, and in the outer year, which is 2014-15, is indicated that we will receive an allocation of 2.398 billion, and the pie chart indicates how this the slice in terms of the allocation to the department has been split, with the various colors indicating that I think admin is getting, which supports all the three programs, is getting some bigger pie, followed by the LP and IR, which I have to indicate that most of our public entities, I think they reside within LP and IR. So we might see that we might see it as a bigger slide going to that program, only to find that NEDLAC, CCMA resides within that program. So it's just a transfer payment to those public entities. And the last slide is just a summary, also which summarizes our increases in the baseline for the next coming 3 years, which indicates that a bigger slice will also go to the public entities that are housed within the Department of Labor. Thank you.
No, thank you, the pass holder, the banker. Is there money in the bank? Do we still have money? Okay. No, thanks for the presentation. Are there questions that members would like to ask before we move into the compensation? Or maybe we should just get a presentation of the compensation, because we can engage on this one after getting the documents only this morning. CEO, I'd like you to send this message to the DG that we need to get information on time. Because next, I've been saying this from last year, that if you bring documents, if we get documents in the meeting, one day we're going to send you home. Because it doesn't help us, you know. This is, and actually make it a clear, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure coming to Cape Town and not being able to make your presentations. I think we're being too lenient. On your other committees, other departments get sent home by committees if they bring information on the day of the meeting. I'm nervous because we've been together for too long, being burned by the sun out there in the field. So there is this thing, you know, that makes us to be a bit lenient, and that leniency is impacting negatively on us. This day is actually wasted in terms of the presentation, because we can't engage. So if we have wasted this day. The compensation gave us documents well in advance. It's more than 3 days ago that this presentation of the compensation was given to us. But why can't the department do that? And thanks, compensation. Thank you very much for responding positively to our call that we need to get documents on time. Honorable Nyagemba, Van der Westhuizen, Masirumule, Makubela Mashele, in that order.
Thank you very much. I think it's almost every time when the portfolio committee recently is supposed to meet the department, then information arrives late. I think there are better people to know more than us as to when is presentations or any document that has to be brought to the portfolio committee supposed to arrive. There are rules on this matter. It's not only rules of us as individuals here, it's parliamentary rules. Now, from where I'm sitting, Chair, a strategic plan of the department to Parliament arrive on the day of the presentation, maybe there was a problem. It might happen that the problem is with us, who didn't inform the department as to when they are supposed to come and present on the strategic plan. So if the fault is on our part, I think our apology. But if this fault is on their side, really there are reasons as to why the presentation arrives today. Rather than conveying that message, Chair, to the DG, I think we need explanation as to what happened. Why? Why? This is very key, and it can't just go without us saying anything, really. What is the problem? I think maybe, Chair, as you indicated, that the COO must convey the disappointment to the DG. I think maybe the DG equally so will be able to say these were the reasons that led to the presentation arriving today. For instance, the one that the Chief Financial Officer presented is for the first time for us to get a detail of this nature. But if also it can arrive today, really is a problem. Very big one. Thank you, John.
Now, from my other experiences in other outside of the National Assembly, it's when people bring documents in the last minute, it means there's something that they're hiding and they don't want you to see it. So you are presented with a lot of documents and there are time problems. Please, comrades, can you just approve this? Next time we'll give you the documents in time. And you end up okaying something that is not okay. I don't want to say that the department is hiding something. I hope they are not. But these kind of tendencies are done by people who've got something to hide. Who was next on the line? Van der Westhuizen, and then it was going to be my...
Thank you, Chair. I'll be quick. Chair, if I could just get clarity, when it says targets, they're on the slides in the tables. Key performance indicators, then targets, then progress. For what year were those targets? Is it for the current year? And the second one is just, have you already got the targets for the coming year? Or are these targets to be achieved by 2016? If I could just get some clarity on that, please.
Let us deal with this thing of the document coming on time first. You know, because I don't think we should engage with this document. We just want an explanation. What happened? Why are we getting this document late? Masrumun.
Chair, I just need an explanation as to how many more times should we not have a complaint? Because as far as I remember, it's more than three meetings. The same thing was raised time and again. And I'm just wondering how many more times should we raise it so that somebody should be able to give us reasons why. Why should we be here in the first place? Why are we in this meeting?
Chair, well, you said we must deal with the documents coming late. Part of it was mine was just an issue on something on part of the presentation. On part of the presentation that was given to us now on the strategic plan, I just wanted to get clarity on something. But because you are saying that must be answered first, maybe let's wait for that, and then after we get an explanation, then if I will be allowed to ask that, or if I would have to bank it and wait for us when we interrogate the strategic plan.
And from members about the document? Okay, no one. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to, on behalf of the DG and the department, to apologize for the document coming late. It will not happen again. We do take the beating, but I'd like to apologize.
Well, I'm listening to this apology, and the last time we discussed this matter of documents, an apology was, there was a plea for apology that it will never happen again. So we're sounding more like a stuck record, you know? An LP with a scratch. If those who know what LPs are, sorry, Makubele Mashele. You know, but I think let us leave it there. We're taking, I don't know whether this is the third or fourth apology about documents coming late. But an apology is an apology. We can only hope that this will lead to changing behavior, so that we'll get documents on time, because you're actually pushing us into a corner. And the other thing is that because we understand the kind of work you do, and we have this buy-in of supporting you all the time, we end up leaving very serious matters, pushing them under the carpet. And as time goes, this thing will build up and create problems for us. So we just need to do the right things. And doing the right thing is giving us documents on time, at least a week before, so that we can read these things individually and as groups. I can allow those who want to raise questions on the presentation, but I was thinking that we should close this presentation thing and then move over to the compensation. Yeah, I think you should raise it because it will escape so that it gets recorded.
Chairperson, mine is just a clarity. You know, the department is talking about the Public Employment Services registering, matching, and placing job seekers. But we are not privy, or we don't know what the bill entails. How are we going to work with, I mean, you are just telling us this is what you are going to be doing in terms of the public service employment, but we don't know what the bill has, whether the legislation compels employers to come to the department, give in their job opportunities and so on. I'm sitting here, I don't know how are we going to work with you guys telling us this is what you are going to do, and we are sitting on this side, we are told the bill, you know, it has not even started at NEDLAC, you know, they are still negotiating their ways into the bill. So is it something that you are supposed to bring into your strategic plan when we don't even know how are we going to be working with you?
And it says by 2013 March they will be implementing those. We haven't even as yet seen the bill coming from this. So we'll need to be taken on board about this. The amendments, what are the amendments? How long is it going to take for this to be served on to be referred to the committee? And there will be public hearings in the process, and you know it's a very lengthy thing. So we would like to be taken through the legislation as in related to the public employment services. You're still on the floor.
Thanks, Chairperson. And to add on that, you know, part of the frustrations that were in some of the labor centers were that, you know, as much as job seekers come in and register, there's no legislation in place that compels employers to come in and give the department the job opportunities that they have. And part of that, you know, you on slide 14, you are mentioning that part of those, maybe the youth, the disabled, and those that are registered on the job-seeking process, you are going to take them to other opportunities, channel them to other opportunities, be it training and SMMEs, empowering them through to entrepreneurship and all that. But you just have figures that you are just going to be doing this. But I don't see a monitoring tool, whether this speaks to part of the public service employment bill itself and all that. You know, it's so difficult for me sitting here transversing through this part of your strategic plan and bringing in the public employment service.
You're asking a question then. Just
raise it so sorry, Chair, for jumping in when you were actually still dealing with something else. I just wanted to know, in terms of these three columns in the presentation, which said key performance indicators, targets, and progress, there's such a discrepancy between the progress and some of the targets that I was just wondering to what time period do these targets refer to? Are we talking about the targets for the current year, or, you know, what, and if possible, what would be the targets that you set for yourself for the upcoming year? Because obviously that's also an indication for us as to how you view yourselves and where you're aiming for, what you're aiming for the upcoming year. So please, if I could just get some clarity. Again, I've not been able to interrogate these staff members beforehand how to interpret this. Thank you.
We all got this document this morning. There should be timelines to the things that we want to achieve by this year, by that month. So many at this cost and by this time. So that it helps us to monitor whether we're making progress or not. And without those timelines, this will be, ever continuous. We can't say that this is what we're... if you say by March next year, before March, we need to say, hey, guys, do you think we're going to achieve this goal? Is the timeline reasonable? The time frame you gave yourself? Do we need to adjust and add more months? But if it doesn't have a measure, how do you expect us to measure it? We can't measure it if there is no time allocated for the achievement. Honorable Nyagemba, you'll be the last person on this one so that we move into compensation.
Thank you, Chair. As I was the first, I would love to be the last. Thank you very much. Chair, I don't know which slide, but you will know because you are presenters. You know the document. You made mention of assisting stressed companies, which is a good move. Now the question that arises is, this is something that happened as a result of the assistance from the money that came from UIF, as a result of the meeting that was, in fact, the issue was dealt with at NEDLAC as a result of those processes. Now, what I would like to find out is the department saying, as a result of that money from UIF, which was not spent, now you want to continue with that? Obviously, the question to me will be, if it comes to an end, will it be to mean that you will no longer assist companies with distress? Or you are then saying, within this budget, that's one of the strategic plans that the department has, because it was not necessarily at that time a strategic plan of the department. It was to deal with the crisis at that particular time. So that's what I want to be clear on, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
The pie. Where was that slide with the pie? Yeah. Can you open that one? Apostolic colors. The light blue and the black. But isn't most of our budget going into internal servicing ourselves? Because if you look at this colors, it's all internal services. If you look at it, how much goes out there, what is our output? But we're going to have time, just saying that, you know, when you come back next time, we need to explain that our budget seems to be more self-servicing than servicing people out there.
I think
that all these questions that were asked, you should answer them next time when we do the presentation, when we redo the presentation, and during the engagement we can start by answering some of those questions. And if there will be other questions in the process, we'll send you the questions in writing. Yeah. So that we can have written answers. Because with written answers, we won't depend on minutes of meetings, but these are the answers that you gave us in writing. And if there's a deviation, we'll be able to say, but no, wait a bit. You know, you said this on page 3, paragraph 1. This is what you said. And it's not talking to what you are doing. This will help us even when you look at your the performance plans. So we will be sending you some of the questions in writing. Thank you very much. May we give over to the compensation. And thanks for giving us the information on time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I think the first slide basically gives you the overview of the presentation, how it's going to flow. We're going to be looking at the measurable objectives, service delivery outcomes, vision and mission. I think those are the areas we'll look at. And then also try to link this to the service delivery outcomes of government. And thereafter, we'll deal with the situation analysis, which basically covers the current challenges that the Competition Fund is facing. And then we'll look at some of the achievements that we've made in the previous year, despite the challenges that are there, and also look at the priorities for 2012-13. I think our presentation does not make a comparison with the previous years. However, if that is required, we'll try to do that in the future. But we're looking at the future targets that we want to achieve. And I think the last slide will also deal with the budget as to how we've allocated our budget. I'm not going to deal with the overview, because I think that is well known that we administer compensation under the current legislation. The next slide basically deals with our measurable objective, which is basically to pay compensation for death or disablement caused by occupational injuries and diseases sustained or contracted by employees within 90 days of receipt of full documentation. And I think we should underline the word full documentation, because the current system is governed by legislation, and it requires that for a claim to be adjudicated, certain documentation have to be available, utilized to adjudicate a claim. So as long as documentation is incomplete, it makes it very difficult for us to adjudicate. And the next slide is on page 5, deals with the broader government service delivered outcomes, and we also try to link it to the Department of Labor's strategic objectives and the compensation fund's objective. If you look at the government outcomes, we've picked up two outcomes, outcome 4 and outcome 12. That is decent employment through inclusive economic growth. And also, we look at an efficient, effective, development-oriented public service and empowerment and inclusive citizenship. I think those are two outcomes that the competition fund is dealing with. And then from the Department of Labor side, we have strategic objective 3 that deals with protecting vulnerable workers, and objective 5, which is strengthening social protection, And outcome 9, which is strengthening institutional capacity of the department. Basically, in Radio Objective 3, basically deals with the provision of protection through our linkage with the occupational health and safety to monitor and prevent accidents from happening, because as we know that most of the vulnerable workers are the ones that are mostly exposed to injuries at work and also exposed to diseases. We also looking at strengthening and widening the provision of social protection for workers in the event where they are injured or they are diseased, such that they are assisted in getting medical attention, and also in the event of fatal injuries or fatal diseases, we also provide compensation to their dependents, and we also provide pension to those who might still be able to go to work or may not be able to go back to work. And I think we have a responsibility also to provide the infrastructure and the capacity for the organization to deliver on the mandate that it's given. And I think on the objective of the commission fund, I think we key one is to promote policy advocacy, both to employers and workers, for them to be able to understand their obligations, rights, and entitlements. We also like to strengthen corporate governance, because we believe that for the institution of this nature, you need to have structures that are there to ensure that the organization operates in a manner in which it's supposed to operate. For example, we have our internal audit structures that are there to make sure that they give assurance to the government or the stakeholder that the monies that are allocated to the institution is used for the purpose it's supposed to be used, and also to ensure that we avoid incidents of corruption, fraud through our risk management structures. Their key function is to make sure that we have systems in place to detect and monitor incidents that are unwarranted. We also want to ensure that our stakeholders, workers, and employers are able to access our services adequately throughout the country, closer to where they are. I think most critical is the financial viability of the compensation fund, because for us to be able to provide these services and ensure that the workers benefit, we need to ensure that we collect revenue, and also when we pay to the right people and invest properly in order to ensure that those pensioners or future beneficiaries of this fund are not put at risk. I think the critical one also is to have a workforce that is well-trained, that is able to understand the mandate of the institution and to provide proper services to the organization, and to also to have the infrastructure, business process, and the technology that will support our operations. And lastly, to enhance the quality of services that we provide to our members. And I think on the last block there, you'll see that are responsible programs in the organization that are responsible for ensuring that those things happen. I think in terms of the vision, the next slide, we aspire to be an employer of choice and an intelligent, reputable provider of compensation for occupational injuries and diseases, rehabilitation and reintegration services. And I think of critical nature is the inclusion of rehabilitation and reintegration services, which I will deal with in the slides that will follow. And I think the mission of the organization, I will not spend much time on it. I think it's clear. But I think of critical importance is to provide those services and also to make sure that we promote job creation, and also we ensure that those workers who are diseased or are injured are able to get adequate medical attention and able to go back to work on time. I think I'll not deal with the slide on values, which is similar to the values that the department has embraced. I'll then move straight to slide number 9, which basically is a basis on which our strategic plan is focused on, that deals with the current challenges that we are facing. I think it is of note that we are known to be an institution that is not able to live up to the mandate that is given in the legislation. And I think there are a number of challenges and reasons why we're in that situation. The Compensation Fund of today is an institution that is highly manual in nature. I think we have not taken advantage of the technology and the processes that have been unfolding over the years, and I think this has also resulted in the situation in which we are today. I think our IT systems have been wanting, and I think we've been before this committee before to indicate the challenges that we face in this area, and I think our last DG before Honorable Mr. Ntlego, Mr. Ntlego came, indicated that this fund was to embark on a new IT roadmap, which was to be assisted by Siemens Limited, Siemens IT Services. And I must indicate that we have traveled that road. However, we have not reached the desired outcome, and I'll elaborate on the challenges that we're facing in that regard. I think the systems have been delivered in October last year, but I think we still have some serious issues in the area of data migration to move data from the old systems to the new system. I think there's a challenge there. I think the training of the incumbent staff to embrace the new system, and I think also change management, I think, has been a lacking area in our migration to the new system. So we've ended up with a situation whereby we have accepted to continue with two systems. That is, to move on to the new system from a finance point of view, to take advantage of the current technology that Siemens has deployed whilst we're waiting for the migration of data on the claims management system. And in that particular area, what we have done was to take a two-pronged approach to say that all claims before October 2011 will still be processed under the new old system, and new claims coming from October 2011 to current will be processed under the new system in order for us to gain familiarity and also get people trained on the new system to get used to it. I think the turnaround time in paying claims, I think, still a challenge. I think it's linked also to issues of system that we've had in the past, and also is linked to the issue of paper processing and the manual process that we're following. And I think it talks also to the issues around the backlog in the processing of medical and compensation claims, which is an impact of the turnaround time that we are experiencing. And I think the other issue that we have is the issue of the delays in the reporting of accidents. Because what you normally find is that you will receive a claim from a service provider before the employer even reports the accident. And in some instances, you find that the medical provider submits the accident report together with the medical claim. So which in its all created an anomaly, and it's something that needs to be addressed seriously to ensure the employer reports timely so that we can be able to adjudicate, so that when medical accounts come through, we are able to pay them. I think I've also indicated earlier that you need also a human resource that will be able to understand and manage the compensation fund. I think from a finance perspective, you have a situation on controlling funds to the tune of about 25 billion rand, and we're also paying claims annually in the tune of about 3 to 4 billion rand. And I think also our document and record management systems are still a challenge, because we're still using what I normally call the brown files, so that when a document arrives, it's first filed in the brown file, and then it starts moving around for processing. So I think those is basically said in a nutshell, in an environment where most organizations similar to us are less dependent on paper, and unfortunately with us, we're still highly dependent on paper. Despite this bleak picture, I think there are things that we could look at and say that we are, I think, on the right track, given the strategic objectives we've set for the previous financial year, that we intended to change the structure to address the issue of human resource and capacity. And I think that has been achieved. The Minister of Labour, towards the end of last year, approved the new organizational structure. And we are now in the process of negotiating with the unions to roll out the new structure to the 9 provinces of the country. I think this process has been holding us. We've been negotiating since November, December, and we've now reached a stage where one union is finally signed, and I think 2 are about to sign, and we are eager to get those 2 unions to sign so that we can start with the process of rolling out the new structure and move people to the new organization. I think also we, as I've indicated, Siemens did hand us a system in October last year, which is an integrated financial and claims management system. Despite those challenges I've mentioned, I think it was an achievement in a sense now that we have now a new system that can process claims and pay. I think we need to just overcome the issues that I've raised, the issue of data migration and the training and change management that has to be addressed. I think also I must indicate that we have had a policy approved on rehabilitation and reintegration by the minister, and we have engaged with the board of the compensation fund to develop the new amendment bill emanating from the policy framework that was approved, and I can indicate that the amendment bill is ready. It does deal with the issues of rehabilitation and reintegration. I think core to the issues in the policy is dealing with the issue of unfair dismissal, where a worker who gets injured, in most instances when they come back, especially those who had back injuries and burn wounds, who takes more than 6 to 8 or 9 months out of work. Mostly they find themselves out of work when they come back because the employer has replaced them with somebody else. An explanation is given, and most of these people are on their own. So the policy is attempting to deal with that aspect, that the employer must create reasonable accommodation, must anticipate this worker to come back, must participate in the rehabilitation process to ensure that we bring this person back to work early. Where it is not possible, I think we should find alternative interventions, either through programs of the Department of Labor, through public employment services, to accommodate that particular worker, and also to deal with the social aspect of injury. Because in most instances, when these workers come back, they are not counseled to anticipate the situation they'll face when they leave hospital. So the legislation will deal with those issues, and I think it might have consequential amendments to the Employment Equity Act, which deals with reasonable accommodation, but not to the extent that it's supposed to be, and also the issue of labor relations on unfair dismissal area. And we also need to look at how we integrate it with the OHS to strengthen the prevention aspect of accidents and diseases. Also, what is looked at in the policy, also in the amendment, is the issue of compliance. I think we want to move away from the current practices of our inspectors, where when they inspect COID or UIF, the emphasis is on whether the employer has registered himself with the compensation fund, whether he's paying his contributions. But I think what we are not emphasizing is the issue of surveillance to determine the extent of, I don't know the correct word, inspector, contamination. If, for example, if a person works in an industry where there's dust, we only pick those people once they are thrown out by the system because they can no longer go back to work. There is no proactive surveillance to ensure that we can identify such people timely and put them on rehabilitation programs so that we prevent them from getting to a worse situation and accessing compensation benefits through pensions, whilst we could send them through medical attention, through the compensation fund, to ensure that they are strengthened and can go back to work. The other aspect is issue of governance, which we're looking at the governance arrangement in the compensation fund, which the board has been emphatic about it. So there is the issue of the relationship between the minister, DG, and the officials in the fund. Other aspects that were raised by King 3, Public Finance Management Act. So we are trying to address those challenges around those three legislations. And I think also we have been on the roadshow in the previous year to engage with the stakeholders of the compensation fund, and I think last year only we've been to three provinces. I think my recollection has come back now. We've been to Limpopo, we've been to the Bilabila, and the also in the Penge area, Beggarsford area, and we've also been to Mpumalanga, Nelspruit, and Bushbuckridge, and we've also been to the Eastern Cape, so advocating the policies of the compensation fund, and also being attending to compensation cases on the spot. And I think the last one, I think we've also started on another program which we are intending to roll out in the new year, is those of trying to build a database of our injured workers in the SADC states, so that we can ensure that they get continuous attention whilst they are in their respective SADC countries. I think last year in May, we were in Lesotho as a launch project approved by the minister, and we've been able to see and attend to a number of our injured workers and diseased workers in Lesotho. And we have also amended our license to the two mutual funds, that is FEMA and Rand Mutual, where we have now given Rand Mutual the license to run all our injured workers programs in the SADC states, because they already have a program and they're working very close with our officials when they're traveling in those regions to assist workers. The decentralization process, I think we've completed the pilot project in the 9 provinces, and we're now intending to roll out, as I've indicated. The priority is that once we've signed an agreement with the unions, we'll start with the process of putting bodies in the provinces. And we're working very close with the Chief Operation Officer, Dahl, to begin to identify office space where we could accommodate those people in the provinces. And we have also started with the process of roadshows, where we're meeting service providers, stakeholders of the Compensation Fund, to begin to sensitize them on the rollout that is imminent, and also to search for ways in which we could work together to improve the services. We are also looking at enhancing the current claim system for the going forward. Some of the enhancements that I will talk to relates to the whole issue of finalizing the data migration, and also automating some of the practices or processes within the compensation fund. For example, we have started with a process where Siemens, in the month of February, they have given us a product where we could be able to get employers to submit their returns online and get their invoices, and so they can be able to pay timeously. We have also requested that as part of that project, they must also create a facility for employers on the web also to report accidents so they don't have to complete forms. So we're in the process of working on that, and we hope that in the new year we will be making announcements on those issues. Again, we are also engaging with the medical profession through the association SAMA and other service providers in the medical aid arena, the switching houses and their administration entities, to find ways in which we can work together to be able to transport medical accounts and provide for chronic medication and all sorts of medical aid requirements in partnership with the private sector. And I think we are now working in such a way that we will be releasing also a request for proposal where we could get assistance, for example, in putting in together the intelligent systems to be able to receive these claims and adjudicate them automatically without human intervention. I think that process is unfolding. We will be submitting to the minister the new amendment bill for approval and hopefully for engagement in the new year. And that will also include the amendments that I've mentioned. And we are planning to increase our stakeholder engagement in the new year. And we're also looking at improving revenue collection for the fund, for us to be able to do that. I think one of the issues I've indicated is the web online submission of employers of returns of earnings, which will automatically generate the invoice and get them paid, and also to chase the outstanding debts that employer still owes us. Then I'll go to slide number 14, which basically provides us with program objectives. We have about 11 programs that are implementing our strategic plan. I think one is compensation, which basically deals with adjudication of impairment, of compensation and determination of impairment, and also the calculation of payments to those workers in the form of pensions. And I think here we're basically saying that in the new year, our target would be to target 80% of new claims and finalize them within two months of registration. And we're also looking at reviewing benefits, because each and every year, at the end of each year, we need to review the benefits, take into account the inflation and the conditions of some of these workers to arrive at a new benefit regime and get the minister to gazette it. I think that this area, this program will be focusing on those two critical areas. And then the next slide is medical program, which is slide 16. I think the focus here also is paying those claims within two months of invoice. And also to provide medical advice on all claims within a period of 15 days. And I think here also to ensure that we advocate ourselves to the stakeholders that we can provide. The next slide, page 19 to 21, deals with HR. I think of importance in HR is the issue of compliance and enforcement of the performance management policy of the department. I think there we should have 100% compliance with regard to our performance management policy. Page 20 there, we're also looking at implementing an internship program as part of the job creation drive of government, where we've set for ourselves in the 5-year period that we will employ around 500 interns, 100 each year, who will be exposed to the work environment and to enhance their employment capability. And I think we also want to ensure that we eliminate our vacancy problem. So we're targeting there to have at least a vacancy rate of 10%. If you go to slide number 23, we have a program called risk management, which deals with all our risk issues in organization. I think in this particular area, of particular importance is the finalization of all fraud related cases or any other case that they may be dealing with 100% within that particular year. And I think also there we want to automate some of the processes in this unit. We hope that it will allow us to be able to detect and monitor some activities that are unwarranted timeously, rather than to rely on whistleblowing. On the legal side, which is the legal division of the compensation fund, I think the critical one was the finalization of the amendments, which I think I've indicated that they're almost at the advanced stage. So in the new year, our focus will be to deliver the amendment bill and also to deal with applications for increased compensation. This is where an employee was injured, but he or she believes that the employer was negligent. And in most in cases, they'll want to get extra compensation. And there we assist them through our court processes to ensure that they get the objection attended to and finalized so that they can be able to access extra compensation. Similar to those who are objecting against the decision of the compensation commissioner, Section 91 objections, where an employee is either not happy with the way the adjudication was done or is not happy with the amount of compensation that was granted. We also indicate that 65% of those cases should be dealt with within 60 days. And I must indicate that the reason why we're saying 65%, not 100%, is because there are other influencing processes here. For example, in some instances, we need medical providers to come and attest. And in some instances, we need trade unions to come and assist these workers in their hearings, or lawyers who they have chosen to come and present. So in those cases, we find that there are delays, and we're trying to find a way in which we could seamlessly make this thing workable, and I think our target is 65%, and also it's linked to the whole issue of decentralization, because if you're decentralized, you could actually use the doctors where the employees is and the legal gurus where the employee is, so that they can get joy. I think here it relates to litigations against the fund. Here we're saying that we will target about 95% of those within 21 days. The next slide is slide number 29. Basically, we're looking at running 3 media adverts, and I think we have already started. And we'll be looking at extending that to the new year, where we'll be advocating the compensation fund activities and also the road shows. I think slide 31 deals with the financial management of the fund, where we are indicating that we need to increase debt collection, and I think our target there is that at least in the next 5-year cycle, we should be able to collect around 1 billion per year. And we are also indicating that 8% of revenue must be increased in the new year. We need to increase our revenue by 8%. I think there is a typo there. We say 8 and 6, so I think it's 8%. We also looking at improving our audit outcomes by 2014. Here what we're saying basically is that we need to address all those AG recommendations, 50% in the current year, and hopefully in the next coming financial year, 2013-14, we should be able to get over those targets. We also are here bound by the Public Finance Management Act, which requires us to pay our service providers 30 days after the invoice was received, and I think we are looking at achieving that target. I think with respect to claims, I think we're still saying, indicating that we'll still take 60 days because that process has other contributing factors that relates to the delays. With regard to investments, we have set a benchmark that normally the Public Finance Corporation uses to weigh their performance against the market. So there's a benchmark called STEFI. I think my CFO is not here, he's on sick leave. She'll be able to explain what STEFI means. But it's a benchmark that they use to say, if you perform above this benchmark, you have done well. Because this is the benchmark that the market is working towards. And we are targeting to reach Steffi and above. I think on the call center side, on slide number 34, we're looking at improving the infrastructure there in the call center. I think the intention there is to put in the telephone recording system for us to be able to monitor all complaints that have been received and have record of those complaints, and so that we can also, in the event where the agent is not there, somebody who is handling the call the following day can be able to go through the system and identify what was discussed and where was the matter left, so that we don't keep on moving people back and forth. We are also implementing a customer, what normally called the queue management system, for those customers who will be coming through our walk-through centers, to be able to monitor the service delivery outcomes in such a way that we want to be able to tell that this person came on this particular time, this was the issue, and it was addressed and finalized within which time. So we are now in the process of rolling that in the new coming financial year, 2012-13. And on the organizational effectiveness side, I think the of particular importance there is to introduce what we call quality management system, and we intend working with our sister organization there, the Productivity South Africa, to assist us in looking at our processes and assisting us in ensuring that those processes are qualitative and they can be monitored, they can be managed. And I think also the focus in this particular program will be to finalize the negotiations and also assist in the rollout of the decentralization project. I think I will not deal with the project management office. I'll go straight to internal audit, to the internal audit function, which is on page 42. I think their key responsibility is to produce the methodology and get it approved, an audit plan, which normally gets approved in the first quarter of the new year by the audit committee, and to begin to roll out that. I think also what they will be doing is to work with our risk unit to implement the new IT system that they will use to manage their audit processes. And the last slide is on page 46, which deals with the estimates of expenditure, where in 2012-13 we intend to, Madhana, can you assist me there with the numbers? But my eyes are reflecting my age. I don't mind put on glasses. We look at spending in operations and administration area about 518 million, and then on the claim side we look at 1.6 billion, and on the medical side we're looking at spending around 2.4. If you look at those two numbers, it confirms the 4 billion that I've mentioned. And we look at total expenditure for the year to be around 4.2 billion in the next financial year. If we go to the annual strategic plan, I think it's page 33, if I'm not wrong. The 4.2 billion, we're looking at raising revenue
of around 5.3 billion, which will leave us with a surplus of around 690 million in the new year. I thank you.
Thanks, CEO. Thank you very much. And thanks again for giving this information on time. I'd like to emphasize that it's a very positive thing. It makes us happy that you really take us seriously. The time frames. On others, there are time frames where you say by this time, this thing will be done. And I would love to see matters of emphasis of matter by the end of the year actually reduced from where they were to a very lower percentage. I know it's not going to be easy to get rid of some of the problems because they're inherent in their systems problems. And it will take much longer time to rectify them. The department has used 1.9 billion rand by the end of this year on information technology. But still, our entities are still using manual, like doing things manually after having spent such a lot of money. So those are some of the things that I get stuck. As an individual, as the CEO, there's seriously nothing more that we can do, you know, to remedy that situation. But we're expecting you to do something with nothing. Be creative. And at least by the time our systems are in place, we know that, you know, everything will be smooth sailing when this major objective is achieved, that of having an info system that will help us, you know, to do our work with minimal strain and producing the best results. Over to you, members, if there are questions, and you know, I'll take Nyagemba, and then after Nyagemba it will be Honorable Albert van der Westhuizen. Then we have Honorable Motau. That is Honorable Motau. He is new in this committee, but I've worked with him in other portfolio committees before, so we're together again for the, you know. Thank you very much, in that order.
Thank you very much. Let's welcome the presentation. On the issue of decentralization, of CF services to provinces, there was a pilot of 5 provinces long time ago, I think 2 to 3 years ago, somewhere there. No, it can't be 3 years. I don't have 3 years in the moment. Yeah, but some are there. And it was a question of assessing how is it easy for people to access the services of the compensation fund. And thereafter, it must be rolled out to other provinces. I'm aware, Commissioner, that there are other services that provinces do render. There are other services that need the approval of head office. But for me, I'm not hearing you because you keep on mentioning that there's a need of decentralization. What about that pilot project of those 5 provinces? Because we said every service, if then you are satisfied, let it be rolled out even to other provinces, because you can't wait for all services to be rolled out even if there's a problem of personnel. That's one point. The second point is on the backlog itself. Hey, Commission. That's why you were brought in. That's why you were brought in. You were brought in to change compensation fund around. Are you changing it around? I'm raising this chair because there are matters of rehabilitation and reintegration here, which when the entity raised those matters, we then said, no, it's a good move. But a good move that will need amendments to legislation in the fund itself and in the Labor Relations Act. Why we said so? We said so because if you look at the reasons of dismissal in terms of the Labor Relations Act, there are three reasons. One is misconduct. The second one is operational requirements. The third one is incapacity. So incapacity and operational requirements, both of them hit hardly on people who have got injured during the process of work. So employers will say, as a result of operational requirements, there's nothing that we can do about you, and you can't sweep, you can't do anything. So I think when we raise those matters, we raise those matters in order for the fund to influence the entire Department of Labor in terms of amendments in the Labor Relations Act. I'm hearing you saying that in the COIDA itself, you have identified such and such. We said identified these sections long time ago, Commission. Not last year. We said this in our first strategic planning workshop that we had, that they need to go hand in hand with other amendments in other legislations. Like the issue of you being the chairperson of the board is in terms of the Fund Act, because you are appointed by the minister, you see? We then said, no, it needs to be independent. So I'm not hearing you. Maybe I didn't read the booklet. I only went through the presentation itself. I'm not finding those. The last point, Chair, is I'm not sure whether we raised this or we're making comparisons between the compensation fund and RAND Mutual Assurance. I know that there was a time where you were using systems from RAND Mutual Assurance, but in the process, that decision, I think in May 2010, if I'm not mistaken, it was changed. But you also said, is it feasible that in the process, RAND Mutual Assurance and the Compensation Fund, meaning that the two departments, that is the Department of Labor and Mineral Resources, talk to each other in order to have one fund. I'm not hearing you talking about that, Commissioner. The backlog. Hey. Is it the one of the backlog, Commission? Commission, no. Indala, and I wonder how many employees are in the fund who are employed on temporal basis to deal with the backlog. Remember, if you are a temporary employee, that's a lot of things that you cannot access. You can't be regarded as somebody who is employed. The problem of IP, you see, it doesn't come to an end. Every time we have backlog, every time there's this backlog, Commission. What are your plans in order to deal with this backlog, Commission? we can't talk about this backlog forever, really. And the backlog goes hand in hand with the finalization of the cases of those who are in the process of being disciplined as a result of misconduct committed within the fund itself. The last point, Chair, is you made mention, Commissioner, that the difficulty of rolling the decentralization to provinces is because of unions. Some signed, some did not sign. I'm wondering what is it that they have to sign, because public service is there to deliver service. How is it delivered? Where is it delivered? It must be delivered. That's the issue. Now, what is the difficulty? What is it that is being signed? Why do you negotiate a decentralization of service delivery? Thank you, sir.
Guys, I've got to look to Bishop Stewart. Some of the problems you faced when you were Bishop Stewart, now you've got to rectify them here. Change the law. thank you very much. Those are very important questions. Some of us are new in this committee, so we're not even aware that there was a pilot project somewhere, piloted in 5 provinces. It would be very interesting to get a feedback about what are the learnings from there. We can't do it now because we don't have the time for that now. But we will, in due course, invite you so that we can engage. The committee is very much concerned about the Compensation Act. The Compensation Act, the Compensation Commission, that, you know, you had more emphasis of matter, and the AG issues raised by the AG, you know, we want to be there for you and support you, so that you turn the compensation around, because without our support, there's nothing that you can do, you know. And if the problems are resources, I don't think it is resources. And if there's something that you'll want us to do as a committee to help you, I can say on behalf of everybody here that we'll definitely put our weight behind and make sure that the compensation, your team, succeeds at the end. Thank you very much. Honorable Nyagemba, you just wanted to say the last thing.
Yes, no, I just want him to smile, Chair. Because he was not smiling when I was raising these matters. A few weeks ago, I was reading a statement about the fund reaching out, in particular in the Northwest, congratulating you, Commissioner, for doing that, about the services that the fund has. Yeah, you see, now you can smile. That's what.
No, he was concentrating. That's why he wasn't smiling. He was concentrating, taking notes. Thank you very much. In that order, Honorable Albert.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I want to echo the sentiments and words of Honorable Nyakemba. I have received complaints regarding the backlog that's not being dealt with, and I have in front of me a complaint that was lodged in September 2001 and has not been dealt with. It has gone so far now that the public protector is actually getting involved in this matter. And this is quite disconcerting. There's a number of these, it seems, out there. I'm not sure how old all the old claims are. And every time, if you look at the history of this specific claim, documents get lost, need to be resubmitted every time and again. It's just like documents get lost somewhere in the system, and it just becomes a frustration. The people concerned have had to get a lawyer involved But even the lawyer hasn't had much joy in getting this matter resolved. And this is just one, so I can only imagine what it must be like for all the other people. Further to this, this matter concerns a person who, the person has actually passed away already. In December last year, this person died. And the question I want to ask to you is, with regard to slow processing of cases like this, do you still pay out to the spouses left behind, or to the children left behind, when a person, a case has been delayed this long and eventually gets approved? Because if you don't pay out, then it opens you up to legal action of considerable higher amounts to be paid than just the claim. Then also, this case exposes another weakness in the system insofar as the sickness concerned or the ailments that people pick up due to working with toxic substances, especially insecticides. And it seems like people who work with these things are diagnosed incorrectly as having skin ailments, dermatological ailments. And the question is, why is that the case? Even when experts from the outside agree over and again that this is a toxicological case, it's not the department seems to, or the Competition Commission actually says it's something else. So it seems that there is a problem with regard to the capacity in evaluating people in the system itself. And I would like to hear from you whether there is a capacity problem and what you're going to do about that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got basically three questions which should have fairly short answers. The first one is, if you could just give me as a new member an indication of the size of the organization, how many staff members you employ, and also what is the percentage of administrative costs to the income of the fund. The second question is regarding the Siemens software system. Last week we learned that the relationship between Siemens and the department has not been a very happy one, and the department acknowledged that it is not necessarily only the one partner's that is at fault here. What has been your experience? Has the existing Siemens contract to do anything with your software and the development there, or is that a freestanding agreement that you've got there? And just in short, how is the new system working? Are the staff understanding it? Is it fulfilling the needs in terms of effectiveness and speed and so on? And then my third question is just, we've recently learned that this fund is currently standing at 24 billion rand, more or less, in accumulated funds. If you could just give us an indication of the total amount of the claims registered against the fund. For example, you know, we've got 24 billion in the bank and we've got registered claims of 10 billion or whatever. Please, if you could just give that, because Chairperson, one of the things that any economy needs least is for money to be withdrawn from the economy and then sitting idle in investments or bank accounts or something like that, because that money could have created new jobs in the economy. So for us, it's important that there must be enough money in the fund to cover the expenditure and the possibility of future claims. But on the other hand, I think it's a disgrace if we just, you know, accumulate money in funds and we withdraw that from the economic cycle. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry for being a bit late this morning. There are many questions I'd like to ask, really many questions, but I'm going to confine myself to a couple. The others we will deal with as we look at the strategic plan later on. I'd like to align myself with Honorable Williams about the frustration that comes about as a result of delayed claims. One of the claims that I've had to deal with is one claimant threatening to commit suicide. It's absolutely tragic. So, just for my own edification, members have talked about the backlog. Just quantify it for me. How big is the backlog now, right now, as we talk? And try to relate it to the objectives that you have. The big one is 90 days turnaround time with all documents provided. How do you fare in that regard? What has been, well, maybe to quantify it, in the last 12 months, how has it been? What has been the turnaround? Has it been 90, 100 days, 25 days, or whatever, so that I can have a sense as to whether the goal that you are now setting yourself for a turnaround of about 90 and then 60 in the cases that we have referred to makes sense. And the reason I ask that question the way I do is simply based on the issue of the infrastructure, the IT infrastructure that the department has. We heard from the DG last week that some of it is rotten. I mean, to put it bluntly, it's very, very bad. And that we don't have the human capacity. If you have these goals, which are commendable, how are you going to achieve them? Thank you.
Thank you, General. Is there any comment, question from other members? Okay. over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I think Commissioner Mkhonto will take all the questions. Thank you.
Maybe let me just start with the last question. And I think the Honourable Member has asked a very good question. If you look at the backlog of the compensation fund, it's very difficult to determine. One, because of the systems itself, the reporting systems. Because this process is manual, just to give you a quick run through what it's like. An employer gets an injured worker today. The person gets immediately put on an ambulance, rushed to hospital, gets seen by a GP, then transferred to the other specialists, hospitalized. That could take 1 or 2, 3 days and or 2, 6 months. But the employer has not reported an accident. That in itself starts creating a backlog, because with the GP who wants his money after 3 or 10 days, with an ambulance provider, you've got specialists, you've got the hospital, hotel that wants their money. So all that becomes backlog. You have to wait for the employer to report. Once you get that report, then the GP who saw the patient for the first time must also submit what they call first medical report, which is used to adjudicate. And these things are done manually. So you'll get an employer's report, you must look at it, and you get a doctor's report. And I normally say, I think the way the process are managed, I think it's unfortunate in the sense that in some instances, the report comes in Afrikaans, the accident report is in English. This poor guy must sit there. He's not a doctor, just another official. Must try to interpret the medical report against the description of an accident. That in itself could take some time for a person to understand that and refer to the next person. Because it's manual, you have to move the paper and the file to the person probably who could assist. So, and these things are coming in large numbers. I mean, for example, if a GP, they have what they call practice management systems. If in 30 days he sends an invoice and he has not received money, the system prints another invoice and he sends it through. So the backlog that we accumulate could be a backlog of one incident, but three times, because the practice management system are producing these things because they are geared to collect cash faster. So that's why they will send reminders all that time. And these documents come into the system, people must look at them manually and determine whether this is not a duplicate or whatever. So that is one challenge. If you look at the medical aid environment, what we call all these processes are, they don't have, for example, medical aid is the easiest with them. They don't have to have another report to compare to adjudicate and pay. You go to a doctor, the doctor checks whether you are registered and you are a legit person to claim. And from there onwards, once they get approval, invoice gets processed. And now the good thing about it, when they get processed, they go into what you call a rules engine, which when these things come, it will check automatically whether this claim is related to the type of injury, whether the charge that has been made there. All those processes are written in the rules engine by a specialist. Unfortunately, in the compensation file, with about 3 or 4 GPs that must deal with the most complicated issues manually. So the file has to be handed over to them. So that, for me, to say honestly, the backlog you never know, because some of it is because you see a lot of paper, you think it's backlog. It could be half of that backlog. But what I can indicate is that if you look at what they process data and manually, I could indicate that the backlog could be in the region of about 2 to 3 months. That's how I could define it, rather than to say it's 20,000 papers. Because how do you look at when was the incident reported and what actually happened? Now there's also the other area. That's the service providers here on one hand. Then there's another area where you deal with the worker, the cases you just mentioned. The compensation fund does not know the patient that they're adjudicating on. They haven't seen. We don't understand. We only see what you call the medical report that comes in written. And they have to make a decision based on that report to say, well, this injury is 30%. Because we've looked at... Similar applies to the diagnosis of a disease. They get a medical report, they look at it, and make a decision. Hence, the objections that keep on coming, because we have not actually seen the person. I mean, I've seen a case where the person was adjudicated to receive 23% in KwaZulu-Natal. When I looked at this person, when we were in the Mbizo with the minister, when this person came and presented himself before us, it was a total 100% case. But because of what was written on the report, the person who was adjudicating on the other side relied on this information without actually doing a physical examination to check whether this person is indeed 23 or 37. So those are also backlogs that are created by objections. And one way of handling them also is also a manual process. Now, what we are looking at, as I've said, I've been to the profession. There is no way you could leave this thing to human adjudication. The systems are there in our country. What we need to do is just to embrace those systems so that we eliminate this horrible torture to our staff, try to make them adjudicate things that they don't understand. Because, for example, even my GPs will not understand what the specialists understand. So I think that's why the challenge is there. But if you get these rules engines, they are designed exactly for that, because they've been designed by specialists and professors. And also, in the event where there's a problem in a medical facility, they have what they call a medical panel of experts. Where you are unhappy about a decision, you refer to the experts, and the experts who has the expertise, they'll decide this is indeed the correct claim or not the correct claim. But I don't have that in the compensation fund. We rely on these GPs to make that decision. And that is why there are litigations from time to time. Post-traumatic stress disorder, another big problem. I don't employ psychologists we receive a medical report from a psychologist that says this person is incapacitated because he has seen 30 dead people horribly killed or whatever. What percentage of compensation do you give that person? We rely on the document that's before you. Then the objections, the lawyers are coming in to say, this person is totally can't go to work. So it's a subjective process that we're using, hence the problems that we're sitting with. The future that the DG is assisting me with now is to overhaul the whole system. I think you cannot use what is existing and what is a problem to fix the problem. I think we need a complete overhaul. Unfortunately, there's no time, but I think we need to just embark on a radical overhaul of that and automate these processes. I mean, I'm waiting for the report from Public Protector now because I've been reported to want to outsource compensation fund. And I don't think this is outsource. This is basically putting a software engine that can actually do the actual interrogation of things and do their work. It's not really kicking people out of work. And I think there's been a misinterpretation of that. I think that's an answer, short answer to the backlog. 24 billion versus returns value. I think if you look at the numbers I've given you there, on average, we're paying around 4 billion a year. And if I say that the backlog is 3 months, you should be looking at about around 800 million probably. That could be the backlog, if I use my estimation. And the new systems, I think, that developed by Siemens within the PPP contract that we are having, I must indicate that we never anticipated that we'll have a challenge of data migration. But it has happened, and I think Siemens has openly admitted they don't have the capacity to do it. They're outsourcing that service to a third party to come and assist. And we await earnestly to get help on this thing. But also, I must indicate that management at our level, I think we also didn't do a good job. When we implemented this system, I think we didn't undergo training. We relied on the middle and low level staff to go for training. And unfortunately, the people at the top can't assist when there are problems because they don't understand the system itself. And I think that's the correction that we're trying to put in place to address that. With regard to size of the organization, about 700 people. And if you look at the discoveries of the world, I think Discovery has around, if I'm not wrong, between 2,000 and 5,000 people that are running Discovery. And we're working with about 700 people. So that's the nature of the conversation fund. Admin costs, I think I've shown a slide there also that indicates that we operational costs are about in the finish of about 500 million. And if one take a quick estimation and calculation, it should be in the region of about 10% of the revenue that we are collecting. Diagnosis, I think I've dealt with the issue of wrong diagnosis. The issue of 2001, I would like to look at that case in questions so that I could follow up and try to assist there. The provincial test, I must indicate that, honorable members, I must indicate that we have piloted in all the provinces. And I must indicate that it is working. In the last year, I think it's in the strategic plan. We have paid over 419 million just through the pilot project, which is almost 10% of the entire claims bill was paid in the provinces through this pilot project. And we hope that if we decentralize, they will be able to pay the entire claims bill in the provinces. Because what we have learned is that the good thing about being in a province, if there's a problem, the doctor is closer, the employer is closer, and issues can be easily resolved. And with the new launch of the Siemens system, I've been doing a roadshow to check how it has impacted on the service providers. It has negatively impacted on them, and that has nothing to do with the data migration. I must admit here, there was a problem with the sequencing of the launch of the system in October and the other processes that have to be completed. For example, we were supposed to have what they call the workflow and the scanning system running seamlessly with the SAP system. But unfortunately, when we went live in October, that was not ready, and it impacted negatively on the processing. And off of 2 days ago, I just learned also that there are hitches on the finance side, which are human hitches, which are not systems hitches, which I've gave instructions as of yesterday to get that fixed. Also, it's holding the backlog because I think the people are not well trained to release the payment. They still want to do it manually when the system can do it automatically. So we're solving that one out, and I think we'll clear the backlog once we could get an automation in that area. Siemens has assured me that if they get the test case today, probably by next week, we should be able to do automatic payments without human interference. I must indicate that the experience we have learned in the provinces. I must indicate that I was in Limpopo. I've met with the doctors there. They're actually unhappy that we didn't roll out the new system when we went live in October because they were working well with the people in the province there. But we have since given instruction that we must start rolling out the new system despite the challenges that we're sitting with, but they must start using it so that they can pay there. Honorable Nyakemba, on the issue of unfair dismissal, I must be honest, I'm learning every day. I also learned this thing through this policy that injured workers are unfairly dismissed. I knew that was an incapacity issue, but I didn't link it to injured workers also. But through the policy review, I was able to do these linkages, and I was able to notice that there is some weaknesses in the manner in which this thing is dealt with in the labor relations. We may need to, listening to the discussion this morning, that when we make these amendments, we need to lock in injured workers or diseased workers needs to be treated differently from ordinary incapacity. And the policy, as it states, it forces employers, the moment the injury has happened, to report it. And we have what you call a disability manager who must work together with the employer while that person is in hospital. They must begin to set up a program to bring that person back and to ensure that that person gets any treatment. So the policy details all those issues, how it must manage, that it doesn't become an unfair dismissal at the end of the day. Where the employer cannot accommodate or cannot take you back, it states what other interventions can be considered for that employee. As I've indicated, I think the way to deal with that, if you don't pay the medical service provider on time, you will not be able to get medical reports that allows you to make certain decisions. For example, if Dr. X has treated a person who's got a back injury, has not been paid for the service that he has rendered, you will not write a final medical report. That we need in the system to begin to determine your compensation, whether what was the extent of impairment, what compensation must we pay. So that is dependent on the final medical report. And in most instances, the doctor will say, I want my money first before I can issue the final medical report. Then there's a worker on the other side who's aggrieved. He's sitting at home. He wants compensation. We can't give it because we have a backlog in the payment of invoices, which makes the doctor unhappy and is unwilling to give the reports. So in a nutshell, if we can fix two sides, the reporting and the linkage with service providers and the quick adjudication, which is what they normally call in medical terms is called, you go for administration. You put this thing on administration. I'll just give an example. GEMS, which is a government employee pay, medical scheme, they don't process claims themselves. This Metropolitan and Med Scheme are doing the work. They're doing the administration. That is why you're able to get doctor serviced on time and paid. And theirs is to push the check and pay the providers. That's the route that we must go, so that we can be able to get these reports, timely, so that we can be able to pay, so that we can be able to do impairment assessment and begin to calculate the compensation and pay the workers. So for me, those are critical decisions that we have to make in order for us to kill this backlog once and for all. And I've seen solutions that if you put them in within a period of 6 to 8 months, you could be able to sit well without a backlog. So what it does, it puts the system at a doctor's desk, and he will submit the claims directly himself or herself, and the system will adjudicate. And you will know on the spot whether it's accepted or not. He doesn't have to wait for a letter or for a communication coming from COIT. It will be told, tell me instead that your diagnosis is not matched by the invoices that we are submitting, so we won't pay this claim. So fix those two things before we can pay. So these are the new things that I believe we must embrace, because they are there, they are not foreign, they are South African, and they are locally developed. And we will also create jobs locally.
Chair, there's just one more on the reduction of emphasis of matter in the AJ report that we need to respond to, and I think that will be it for the compensation fund.
Honourable members, on the issue of the AG, the AG qualifications relates to revenue collection, and also relates to the completeness of that revenue. Basically, what it means basically is that if you register an employer, you must be able to get all the full details of the employer and be able to invoice and get money collected timeously. I think that is what happening, because our system is still manual. They have to get a return of earnings, capture, sort of stamp it. That's how the first I've seen it. Put it in the file, and then when the employer inquires, then they put it out, capture it on the system, and somebody else must go and raise the invoice. That process itself can actually lead to about 3 to 4 months before an invoice is released, the way the process is operating at the moment. Hence, the new web system that we are putting in place to get the invoice done quickly. The other issue that the AG is raising is that to what extent do we know that the money that the employer is declaring is the correct money? Do you go out there and inspect the employer to check whether his payroll matches what he has written on paper? That we still found wanting there. We may need to increase our inspectors, especially the payroll auditors, to assist us there. That is an area where it requires more human beings and more human bodies. The other area that is raising is the issue of records management, because of the manual nature of the documents that we're having. They are giving us 5 days to produce. For example, if they pick up a claim, they say, could you give us proof that the doctor claimed this money from you? For us to be able to prove that, we must go and get the physical document. And sometimes we're not able to pull it out within 5 days because of the manual nature of our records. And we are found wanting there. And automation will be a solution to that. A problem.
Thank you very much for
But I still think that we need to have a session between the committee, the compensation fund. We'll ask you to invite some of the board members to that meeting. And I'll be much happier if the CFO of the compensation fund and risk management team will be part of our meeting. I think it would be much helpful, because what we want to do is we want to find a way of how do we support you to achieve these noble goals that you have on paper. And we know that some of the things are the way they are, not because you are dragging your feet, but these problems are within the system. These are systems problems. So we need to revisit those systems and say, what is this that we need to chop and change? What new things do we want, you know? Because the organization is not only a structure. There might be other things, you know. Are you losing people that you have trained in the department to the private sector? If so, why? How many? And why did they leave? Are your salary scales attractive to people? Can you keep people within the system because you pay well, or you depend on their conscience, that by the grace of the Holy Spirit, this person will stay on for the next 5 years? You can't keep people if you are paying them peanuts. So you need to start checking what are the scarce skills that you need in the department, and if you are to outsource some of the things, for how long and for what purpose, you know? If we outsource this part, let's say we get an outsider to help us do this, who will be working with that consultant to impart the knowledge to the department? I know that the consultants don't like teaching people, because then they are defining themselves out of a job, you know? The more they help you, the more they carve themselves a niche to stay on forever and ever within the department. So if we are to appoint this consultant to do something, we need to, you know, take us on board to say, this is what we are going to do, this is how we are going to learn from this person, these are the measurements. If we have learned something, these are the indicators that will show the committee that, yes, we have learned something. When the consultant leave, we don't have to call them back again. Or if they are to come back again, it will be only to do coaching and training, not necessarily doing the work themselves, because we will have trained people in there. Honorable Nyagemba, I saw your hand up.
Thank you, sir. No, I think I'm a little bit. When the commissioner made the presentation, when he was talking to it, decentralization of the services to provinces, he might mention a stumbling block of unions that are not signing. But now in the answering process, he's saying that services has been decentralized to all 9 provinces. Now, I'm left with the question as to, is it still the unions not signed? Because I wanted to know, are they signing? Are they not signing? What are they refusing to sign? Are they refusing to sign the services to be decentralized to provinces? Or they are not signing because services have been already decentralized to provinces? I don't understand clearly. I want him to make me understand, sir. Because I raised that question on the basis of what he explained when he was presenting as to why it is not easy to roll out to provinces. He mentioned the unions. Now there are no unions. Then last one that I like is this public protector thing vis-a-vis outsourcing. He is not outsourcing. I mean, can you be a little bit give me clarity on that one? Yeah, thank you, Jeff.
Honorable Albert, on the other hand, I'll go over to you, Honorable.
Yes, thank you for the answers. I would like just to have clarity. When a claim is submitted and the person subsequently passes away, is the claim completed then, especially if there's a delay in the claim, and would the payment still be made then to the spouse or the children who are left behind? Thank you.
Any other comment from the members? Okay, let's give over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Members. I think I'm sorry if I forgot to pick that one up in answering. Yes, the entitlement does not disappear. The dependents of the deceased can still continue to access the benefits. Maybe on the issue of outsourcing, I think there was a complaint because it's one of the strategic plan intents was to put the medical aid portion of our administration under administration. And I think the concern that was raised to the public protector was that there was an intention of the commission fund to outsource that thing without following legal procedures and all those things. So we have not had a reply from the public protector. They did the investigation, and we're waiting for the reply to indicate just whether that allegation was confirmed or not. And I think that was the issue. And I think also there was also some newspaper articles also that indicated that we want the compensation fund is going to outsource the services to a private providers, so which meant that people will be out of jobs. And I think that also has created some uncertainty and fear, and I think that is why we've been slow in moving in that direction. And I think also the issue of change management, if you don't communicate things properly, you end up people picking up wrong things and blowing them out of proportion. The intention here is to say the adjudication of medical accounts, because they need a specialist knowledge and systems to do that, because of the volumes of claims we're getting. We're getting more than what I'll call your normal medical aid, your discovery and all that, with the 700 people that I'm sitting with, working in different areas. But we do our best to try to adjudicate up to 4 billion a year. I mean, the total, I think, medical bill for the whole country, I think, was in the region of about 200 billion. So if we could be able to do around 4 billion, we're trying to get there. But it's a challenge. I think we should be paying more. I believe that we should be paying not 1.9 billion in terms of medical accounts. We should be paying in the region of 3 or 4 if we fast enough, or pay less, because also if you're not sophisticated enough, you can also pay what you're not supposed to pay because of your inability to interpret a diagnosis or whatever, or a treatment that is done. So I think that's a challenge that we have, but we're addressing it. I think we've done some few change management among some senior members of the staff, and I think we will be able to address that in the new year. I believe that we will be able to move in that direction. With regard to the unions, what has happened, Honorable Members, is that we are using the current staff, we are sending them to provinces from Pretoria. And we have some temporary staff there in the province who are working with them to process and adjudicate claims. And from time to time, they have to come back to Pretoria, come back the following week, whatever. So that's the arrangement that we are having at the moment. But that's not ideal. It's not ideal because there's a lot of also money, hotel accommodation and all those things that we are incurring as a result of them. Well, this was a pilot. We had budgeted for it, but we cannot continue to spend money on accommodation and all those issues. What we then decided to do was to come up with a new structure for the whole country, which says how many offices are you going to have in Mpumalanga? How many offices are you going to have in the Western Cape? So, for example, in Gauteng, we came up with about 16 processing centers, and that's where we have to put people. But currently, with the pilot, we're only operating in the Pretoria office and then the Joburg office. So it's only two, using the people from head office going there and coming back. So the new structure, which says we need so many people in the provinces, and these are the levels and all that, when we implement that, because people must decide whether they want to go to Mpumalanga or not. So we've got what do you call it, a migration plan. How do we migrate people from the current to the new? For example, to the 16 centers in Gauteng. Probably people in Gauteng will agree to go to the 16 centers without any issue. But to send somebody in Pretoria now to Eastern Cape or Limpopo or Northern Cape, they must volunteer first. So it's a process of whether they want to volunteer. We have on the framework, there's an agreement. That's where unions are supposed to sign to say this framework is sound, it's agreeable, we can implement it. So that we can start now moving the bodies to the provinces. First, on voluntarism, those who are volunteering, we allocate them to the province. Then there's a process also of interviews where the post might have changed because of the new structure. It might no longer be the same post. So there are a lot of things in it that is holding us from not moving immediately. We have an agreement that the pilots can still continue, but the full decentralization, where there will be no more processing in the Pretoria office, is the one where we are waiting for signing, and so that we can implement. The issue that the unions were left with is mandating. NEHAU has signed, they've mandated, they've got the mandating, they've signed. PSA is still seeking mandate. SASAWI also says they are still seeking mandate. But they can't seek mandate forever. I think at some stage we may need to elevate these things to a higher level for us to be able to get an agreement and implement. Because it's impacting on service delivery, I agree with you. It's impacting heavily on service delivery. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You need to improve on your communication internally, because you see, once people start complaining, it means there's something that you might have discussed this thing at different wavelengths. Other people saw it as a way of getting rid of them, some of them will think this is a is tantamount to, what do they call this thing? What one dismissal? Constructive, dismissal. That's why the unions have to get a buy-in with this new structure, because people who work in the department belong to different trade unions, and the work of the union is to look after the interests of the workers. And if I was working in this office in the last 3 years, and somebody tells me I must move about 20 kilometers when I was walking from home to work, I'll definitely resist that, because it means it's an extra expense on my part. You know, I need to take a taxi, a train, a bus, or drive to work. I think we need to improve on the internal stuff in terms of, you know, how we communicate. It's the buy-in by all staff, from the cleaners up to those below you, chief. People need to understand what is happening. They don't have to agree with it, but at least they must understand that this thing is not a, what is it? Somebody once said, it's a communist maneuver to get you arrested. There are no maneuvers here. People must know that it's not a conspiracy to get rid of them, of some of them. But I think with non-performers, we'll support you when you fire people who are not worthy of their salt. Because what is the use of having people who are not adding value to what you do? Then we'll say, give them out. And we'll support you as a committee. I think this takes us to the end of our engagement with the compensation commission and the commissioner. Thank you very much. We'll keep you wired. We need to, like I suggested earlier, that we need to get a report of the pilot. Because if there's a pilot that's been there for more than a year, what is the progress report? What have we learned? What are the learnings? What are things that we need to, you know, to effect? And what are the things that we need to just leave because they are not working? You know? So we'll need that report about the, you know, because you can't run a project, a pilot, and after a pilot, and also this thing is working in the provinces, all of them, without giving a report. These are the findings and these are the learnings. Please let us do that. And whenever you are ready, tell us. And if you can tell us within the end of this month, we'll invite you to come and brief us. And the notice might be a week, you know. For that, it is important that we give you this support, and we can only support you by monitoring what you do. With these few words, we have come to the end of our meeting. Until we meet again, there are issues that we raised that to take to the TG. And, yeah.
May I, just on the issue of when we meet again, ask you, Chair, when would that be? Because on an earlier program, there was a meeting scheduled for this coming Friday, the 16th.
That is what we're going to talk about now after this meeting. But we have decided to postpone that meeting of the 16th. Yeah. Because there's an MPs on that weekend. Is it still on? Commandant.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. When we came to the meeting, it was still on, but I've just received an SMS indicating new developments. We are going to communicate with your office. Apparently, the minister has been invited by the deputy president. There is something that, yeah, that compels minister to be, yeah. I'm sorry.
It's not on this weekend. Yeah, okay. All right. No, thank you very much. So we've decided to cancel that meeting of the 16th because we'll be leaving to Germany on the 18th. So to give members who are from far to go home and do their bye-byes. Okay. Thank you very much. We'll keep you wired. Honorable members, if you could remain so that we do our in-house things. Thank you, Baya. Mana Hosh. No. What's your impression about the...
No, no, but change and upset. insurance company. And what is that who bought it? Don't go there. Don't even go there. What are you looking for?
It's a root engine. It's a root engine. That's what I'm asking. It's for the root engine. Mostly, you don't look. This treatment, which they may like, is relevant to the things that they're making. Would you? That is not to make anybody sick. You don't need to. But myself, if for example there's an anomaly, you will repair this thing, you'll still be using this. That's what we are asking. Instead of us doing it ourselves, developing the system,
now if you